Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we welcome back Tavi Costa, who is a global macro analyst at Crescat Capital. How are you today, Tavi?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
Let's begin by talking about the US 2-year yield. You have suggested that this particular note has a great track record of predicting recessions and bear markets. Examples include the tech crash of the 2000s and the financial crisis from over 10 years ago. And today, when you look at major tech stocks like Netflix, which you have stated has recently broken down from a 5-year support line, is this just another confirmation to you that the business cycle is over from a macro perspective, Tavi?
Yes, absolutely. And I think the cycle isn't over until the equity market, really the overall equity market, enters a bear market, even though we did have some turns in the cycle before in which bear markets didn't happen. But I think this cycle, that's going to be the case. In terms of the 2-year yields log chart that you were referring to, that is a very powerful tool to predict recessions. And when you look at that and the 2-year yields kind of bump into this multi-decade resistance line, it tends to be the end of the cycle or the top of the cycle. And so that aligned with our macro models, all flashing warning signals, and things like, you know, we have today close to 17 economies with 30-year yields below the Fed funds rate, which in our view, that's kind of a one way to see it as a global yield curve inversion. And then other things like the spread between the consumer confidence and sentiment index that now is at a 40-year high, and it has an uncanny relationship with predicting recessions. So, you know, we're putting all those numbers together, and now we're having some economic indicators coming out that are kind of approving the thesis. Like 2 days ago, we had the ISM manufacturing report, the new orders, the employment, the price paid, all of them are trending lower. And more recently, I think 2 weeks ago or so, we had the BLS preliminary downward revision in non-farm payrolls, close to 500,000. That is the largest downward revision since 2008. And the most important one in our view, it really is the percentage of yield curve inversions, which, as you know, we calculate this by looking at all possible spreads in the yield curve. And close to 75% of the yield curve got inverted at some point in this cycle. And, you know, this is not the only problem here in the U.S., because it's a problem in Canada. Close to 90% of the yield curve in Canada is inverted today. In Japan, it's never been this inverted before. It's a very interesting chart. Now close to 67% of the yield curve in Japan is inverted. Hong Kong is another one. 80% is inverted. And UK, 70%. Australia, 50%. So the list goes on. It's definitely a global problem. So clearly the credit market is screaming a recession ahead, and the equity markets continue to ignore. But you're starting to see a few pockets of the market starting to fall apart. The oil E&Ps are, you know, now at as low as the global financial crisis levels. And then you have industrials and financials and healthcare, materials, energy. All those sectors actually peaked in 2018. So the broad leadership here in this market is actually long gone. I mean, it's actually narrowing the amount of stocks and sectors that are actually keeping up with this market today. And then you have copper starting to fall apart. I think copper prices are down like 40% or so in the last 5 months. And one major index or ratio that I think everyone should be watching, aligned with the 2-year yields that you referred to, is the gold to oil ratio that has been surging recently. And sure, today it hasn't, but if you look at the trend, it has been going a lot higher, and that tends to coincide with market peaks as well. So we certainly have a structural problem here in the market here in the U.S., and the overall bear market is probably next. The market darlings, like you referred to, on Netflix, then we had Autodesk, and we have some other software stocks. You know, software stocks today are trading at 75 times free cash flow, and so Wall Street is really pricing them for perfection now. And I think they're getting very close here to a moment of reality in which prices are going to have to converge back to where fundamentals are of all those firms.
You have recently stated, Tavi, that the macro trade of the century for you is long gold, short global stocks. So in regards to gold, what we have seen so far this year is just the start of a much bigger move for gold. And how does silver look to you? I know you study the silver to S&P 500 ratio. And how important is that chart when taking a long-term view of silver?
Yes, I think the precious metals are one of the few pockets of this market that is still offering tremendous value, especially to hedge against extreme monetary policies and the bursting of asset bubbles and this record global leverage that we have. And this awareness now of global fiat currency debasement policies that we're seeing, I think it's still in the very early stages. And gold is very likely to become this core asset that for those who believe in this macro development. So I think we're entering this period of monetary policy lunacy, and gold kind of bottomed in 2015 or in late 2015, and it's up 50% since then, but I think we're at the very early stages of a bull market for precious metals in general. When you look at the mining stocks, it bottomed a month later than gold in 2015 or so, or 2016 actually. And if you looked at that, they almost triple from January to August in 2016, and then they retraced back almost 50% of that gain, and it started a second leg of the bull market in November of 2018. I think we're going to at least surpass the 2016 previous highs and continue to move a lot higher, as if it is confirmed that it is a second leg of the bull market here. So we got another 15% or so to retest that level. And then silver is in a very similar position. I mean, silver is still needs to catch up quite a lot with the 2016 levels, and gold already surpassed that level, which gives you the direction of those trades. Platinum also looks really interesting. It's another one that probably bottomed in later of 2018 or so, and I think there is a lot of room to rise there. But more importantly, I think that things, when you have a problem of yield curve inversions, it's a time to buy gold and sell stocks. So when you have a situation like gold to S&P 500 ratio rising, I think that's probably one of the most compelling macro developments of late, and I think it's probably going to continue to happen as we see this unfolding. The part of precious metals that also looks interesting is the fact that we still have a lack of a pension funds allocation towards gold, and the other part too is when you think about ETFs and passive investments in general, look at the S&P 500. There's only one company that is actually a gold mining company in there. So it's kind of stunning. And I think that there's a lot of room for positive changes here in the following years or so. And when the Fed is reducing rates at the peak of the cycle, I think it's a time for any money manager to be to take a defensive stance. And now with nominal rates falling, which causes real yields to fall as well, I think this is all critical to understanding the gold market, as real yields in an inverted version actually is very correlated to gold prices. So I think that's all playing out, and it's I think gold is in a very early stages of a bull market.
Excellent. There was a recent tweet from Kevin Smith, your CFA at Crescat Capital, talking about the possibility that the Hong Kong protests are actually a symptom of a bigger socioeconomic problem for China. And from an investment perspective, most investors are not positioned for a possible Chinese-led market disruption event or panic. Can you talk to us about that and your outlook on China?
Yes, it's actually a negative outlook. I think China is at the outset of a debt and currency crisis, and it has an oversized banking system with a rising non-performing loan problem, and that has been that for it's worsening, and now you have them suffering from a shrinking current account problem, and not just that, but overvalue house prices too, And now, you know, the political crisis is just adding to the whole problem. And it's really all those issues are kind of at the center of this historic macro imbalance that we have. The yuan just had its worst month in 25 years. It was even worse than the August devaluation of 2015. So there's definitely something going on in China. We think China just hit a wall of debt, and there's more currency dilution here, more likely to happen in the following months or years. And this, I think that the big problem here that I've been kind of shifting my focus a lot, it's been on the Chinese housing market. And it's very interesting when you look at all the public traded companies in China and in the property development and home builders space. It's kind of, they're worth somewhere close to $1.2 or $2.5 trillion in enterprise value. And they only generate somewhere close to $5 billion in free cash flow, at least in the last 12 months. And it's not skewed by a large amount of companies. If you actually look at those companies, about 55% of those companies reported free cash flow losses in the last 12 months as well. So, it's certainly a sector of the economy, which is very significant, as I said, over $1 trillion worth, that it's accumulating an enormous amount of debt. Now, in aggregate terms, those firms have somewhere close to $600 billion of net debt outstanding balance today, and only about $580 billion of equity. So it gives you somewhere close to 107% of net debt to equity ratio, which is just as bad as it was at the peak of the housing bubble here with the home builders and property developers in the U.S. So China's debt bomb is definitely ticking faster. And more recently, we've seen China Evergrande, which is the most indebted Chinese property developer today here in China. It's down somewhere close to, 45% or so in the last 5 months. It's a big deal, especially when they just reported that their profits collapsed by over 50% on a year-over-year basis. And, when you have that and you know the problem that those companies are, like China Evergrande, for instance, has somewhere close to 50% of their debt is going to mature this year. So those guys are in a cash crunch kind of situation. And I think that that's becoming a problem. And then you add the problem of Hong Kong. As I said, 80% of the yield curve in Hong Kong is now inverted. And it's a huge banking system relative to GDP. In our calculation, the Hong Kong banks are somewhere close to 750% of banking assets to GDP. So definitely a problem. But more importantly is when you look really deep on the banks in Hong Kong, they're only provisioning somewhere close to below 2% of their revenues for loan losses. And that's even lower than they used to provision back in right before the Asian crisis. So I think this is all adding up to be a much bigger problem. I actually would challenge anybody to show me a Hong Kong bank that is not breaking down today. Some of those banks are actually breaking down from some critical multi-decade support lines, like going back to the early 90s or so. But I think this is all becoming a big problem, and it's going to continue to be a problem, and it's probably going to drive global growth a lot lower for the following months and following years.
A good guide at getting the macro picture correct is in some part understanding and studying history and how certain events or cycles tend to play out again and again. So what books have helped to guide you from a macro perspective, Tavi? And should every investor take a much longer, broader view of the markets than the short-term gains that are usually cited on Wall Street to have a chance of maximum gains?
It's a good question. I read a lot of diverse type of books and from machine learning. And one good book is The Master Algorithm from bibliographies that I enjoy reading. There's one that comes to my mind right now is from Sam Zell, Am I Being Too Subtle? It's a great book as well. But a lot of finance related books. One that I think is a lot of people do kind of a light reading on that, but it's a very dense book and it has a ton of information is The Alchemy of Finance by George Soros, probably the most successful macro thinker in history, I think. The Market Wizards books are great as well. But in terms of history, I rely much more on data because I think everyone can kind of interpret the history and geopolitics in their own way. But data for me is really it's a lot more critical. And you know, understanding the macro factors of back in the days. And I think it's what makes geopolitics more relevant as well. So I like to, you know, I always like to understand and analyze data as much as I can, especially historically. And most importantly is understanding, you know, the history of business cycles and economic booms and busts. I think that's all important. But I think the data really drives the narrative over time. And I think, you know, for any listener, at least that's my approach, I really try to dive into data to understand history. I think that that's the best, apolitical way or the most apolitical way to understand what happened in the past.
Yeah, some great points there. Okay, I would like to understand, Tavi, how you view risk within the markets. Do you hedge your positions, and are there any lessons you've learned from perhaps underestimating risk within the financial markets? And can you tell us about the risk of missing out on a trade or a trend? An investor can't be in every market and catch every move. So how do you streamline your view when making investment decisions?
So I think that we got, for instance, the gold trend, the precious metals trend, right? And one thing we didn't capitalize as much as I wish, at least, it was the treasury trade was, I think, in hindsight, it seems easy, but it was actually very hard to make that call back in early January or so, that treasuries are going to rally as much as they did, in my view, at least. I think we got part of that trade right by buying treasuries and shorting bonds, German bonds, as a pair trade. It worked well this year, but I wish I would have seen this treasury trade coming. That would have gone very well along with the precious metals trade. But our approach, at least, I mean, every person has a different way of seeing, you know, how to hedge positions and how to especially size and implement trades in general. But I find the best way to do it is to really figure out what are your highest conviction macro themes that you can find, and then kind of diversify on the ways of how to express those views. I think it's key. So let's use the precious metals theme, for instance, as an example. You know, we pick a basket of mining companies, and we use macro models and fundamental equity models to kind of help us to or guide us into what we think it's going to be are going to be the best companies, and then kind of position trying to find the ones that offer more asymmetry to this trade idea, and then shift look at the investment alternatives in general to find what are the ones that are most historically distorted. I think that's key. And then kind of shift towards the less volatile options that you have as those themes start playing out. So one way to see that is when your short positions start working, obviously they shrink. So you got to find new options if you want to still have the same size of the position. That's a very important part of understanding portfolio management, at least in my view. But giving less priority to trading in and out of positions in the short term is key. Understanding the long-term trend, and sure, let's say you're, you know, rather than being 100% invested, shifting to 60 or 70%, like we kind of did now with the silver. We saw the RSI for silver was extreme on a 14-day basis. And so getting a little bit off the table to not get punished on these short-term trends are key, but at the same time, we're still long silver, still long precious metals in a big way. So not giving too much priority to this kind of short-term trading, but understanding that there will be moves here and there. And the important part is to be on the trend for the long term. If there is some sort of turnover, and obviously there will be in terms of shifting positions, I try to focus more on shifting towards refreshing the portfolio into making sure that we have the best positions to express those views.
Excellent. Okay, as we begin to wrap up, Tavi, is there anything else you'd like to talk with us today? Anything else you can share with our listeners?
Yes, I think that we have three main themes in the portfolio today, which is really the long precious metals trade and China being this credit and currency credit bubble that we think it's in the process of bursting. And, you know, we still continue, heavily invested in those themes, but they have worked out well. The one missing part of our third theme that hasn't worked yet has been the downturn in the U.S. business cycle, which I think is really where the opportunity lies. as I had here for the next 12 months or so, stocks are still record overvalue, at least, you know, eight fundamental factors that we look at. So I think that that's kind of the overall market is the next shoe to drop, along with things like junk bonds and investment grade bonds. When you look at LQD, the ETF of investment grade bonds, it's been going nonstop higher and higher. When you look at those companies, actually, especially on a leverage basis, you know, they should be actually be named as junk bonds, denominated as junk bonds. So we find a lot of opportunities, not just in the equity in the stock market here in the U.S. in the short side, but also in the corporate bond market as well. So I think that that's you know, staying still investing in those two themes that I said have been working out. But I think putting a lot of focus now on the third one that I still think is about to come, and I still think it's probably one of the best short opportunities we've seen in history for the U.S. Stock market.
Okay, thank you very much for your time today, Tavi. Always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?